Welcome to the Monitor Daily Podcast. It's Wednesday, May 5th. Thanks for joining us. I'm Mark Sappenfield.
And I'm Jessica Mendoza.
The Christian Science Monitor is a peculiar publication. It doesn't exist simply to tell the news. It exists to prove the power of journalism to uplift the world, showing that one can engage with the news without losing hope or humanity. So every day, Monitor reporters and editors begin their day with a simple question: what does the world need most from the Monitor? When we asked that question recently, the answer was to start a new project on respect. Why respect? Because while the high goal is to love one's neighbor, sometimes a simpler first step is needed. In a time of historic partisanship and broad disinformation, even that simpler step of respect can seem prohibitively hard. Also, respect is complicated. Sometimes it is used as a cudgel to force submission as much as a waypoint to deeper love and understanding. Starting today, the Monitor will examine the graces and complexities of respect in a half dozen stories spread out over the next 3 weeks. We open with Harry Bruinius, looking at what respect is and its historical importance to our public dialogue. Along the way, we'll look at education, politics, race, and the tension between religious and gay rights. But most important, we will look for where respect is operating and how it can begin to open hearts and transform adversaries, revealing ways forward. We hope you will read along and share your feedback with us at editor@csmonitor.com. Now, today's stories. Our first story. Respect is a core civic value to American democracy, but it can also be used as a tool of repression. As a fractured nation seeks to knit itself together, the ability to disagree, yet not hate, is seen as essential. This is part of the Monitor's Respect Project.
Respect can be a difficult word, often used as a tool to protect inequity or injustice. Before the Civil War, pro-slavery politicians denounced the abolitionist movement, charging it with breaching stabilizing norms of civility and respect. Yet in its deepest meanings, respect is seen as an essential ingredient in the American experiment. Amid the nation's political polarization and widening cultural divides are millions of Americans who have lost sight of each other, caught in reflexive rituals and simplistic cliches that dismiss, demonize, or otherwise delegitimize perceived enemies. Many thinkers say the need for respect in today's national conversation is urgent. It begins to reestablish the shared purpose of a common humanity. Alexandra Hudson is the curator of the newsletter Civic Renaissance. She says, "Civility today is often weaponized and trivialized, thrown at people who are not on the right political team if they breach a certain norm of good manners. But respect helps get at something a little bit richer and deeper. It's a way of reflecting on what that means for what we owe one another by virtue of our inherent dignity, our irreducible worth as human beings, and as fellow members of the human community." This story was reported by Harry Bruinius in New York for The Monitor.
The murder of George Floyd jolted many educators to prioritize teaching about structural racism and social justice, and resulted in pushback over student indoctrination. Minneapolis schools offer a window.
Nafisa Muhammad is a high school teacher in Minneapolis, and she follows her students' lead on whether or how much they want to discuss social injustices in the news. For Ms. Muhammad, covering these topics comes naturally. Other teachers are uncomfortable or don't see the purpose. As educators across the country wrestle with addressing the nation's racial reckoning in their classrooms, what's happening in Minneapolis offers a microcosm of the struggles and lessons learned since the death of George Floyd here nearly a year ago. It's played out in the district in the form of teacher training and more space from some teachers for in-class discussion. In the Twin Cities region overall, there's been an increase in courses focused on the study of race. There has been some pushback, as there is with the changes being made in the rest of the country. But educators like Ms. Muhammad are trying to be part of the path forward. Her classes include content that shows the strengths and successes of various racial and ethnic groups. She says, "I believe joy is healing. In our classrooms, especially in North Minneapolis, our kids deserve to be in that healing process." This story was reported by Chelsea Sheasley in Minneapolis for The Monitor.
Jerusalem's recent riots punctured a facade of calm that obscures deep fault lines. As Jews seek to change the city's demographics, Palestinians see their cultural and political life suppressed.
In the East Jerusalem neighborhood of Silwan, outside the old city's walls, Jews and Palestinians live in tense proximity. The area is traditionally Arab, but religious Jewish families have bought property and moved in, determined to change the demographics. Palestinian taxi driver Taha Sarhan lives on the garden level of a house his father built. Two brothers live on the second floor. A third sold the top floor to a Jewish group. "I'm mad at my brother, not them," Mr. Sarhan says, gesturing toward the family upstairs. Rioting in Jerusalem in late April may have been sparked by a fairly arbitrary Israeli decision to barricade a popular gathering place during Ramadan. But it also reflected deep fault lines. With Israel jealously guarding the symbols of sovereignty, Palestinian cultural and political life has been suppressed. Daniel Seideman is director of a left-wing Israeli nonprofit. He says, "Palestinian youth cannot imagine a trajectory that leads them to freedom. That is the ultimate destabilizer. They get by within the two poles of life in East Jerusalem. One is to adapt, the other is to resist." Israeli officials say there's no legal basis for preventing Jews from buying property, says Arya King, deputy mayor of Jerusalem. "Jerusalem is the Jews' only holy city, and we have to protect it." This story was reported by Dina Kraft and Fatima Abdul Karim in Jerusalem for The Monitor.
Sometimes an event shoves a supporting character onto center stage. That happened recently to someone our reporter had interviewed, and it shined a light on his heart and humanity.
In a windowless room at the Oakland Asian Cultural Center, Carl Chan unspooled his story to Monitor reporter Francine Kiefer. He shared two foundational events that he says changed his life. The first occurred as a middle school boy in British-governed Hong Kong, where he was born in 1958. As he walked to catch his bus home, he noticed five white British boys picking on a Hong Kong boy. "This is wrong. Don't pick on him," he told the boys. Surely, he thought, if he spoke up, people around him would stand with him. Instead, the Hong Kong boy ran away, and the British boys turned on him, beating him. And to his great surprise, bystanders told him not to fight back. Years later, in the United States, he saw a video featuring a Black man giving a speech. The energy, he says, "I have a dream," that was so powerful. Mr. Chan says he felt as if Martin Luther King Jr. was almost telling his own life story, inspiring him to do his best to make positive change. So he persists, despite recently being attacked in what police say was a hate crime. He sometimes has nightmares. But if anything, his resolve is stronger. The full version of Francine's essay is available in today's issue or at csmonitor.com.
In our global progress roundup, intense efforts by volunteers as well as scientists are protecting animal life, from vulnerable turtles nesting in Cyprus to pollinators that need more habitats in the United Kingdom. You can find the full roundup by Lindsay McGinnis in today's issue or at csmonitor.com/daily. Now, commentary from The Monitor's editorial board on fighting corruption. During a visit to Ukraine this week, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken plans to deal with what he calls the internal threat to Ukraine, the vast corruption that undermines its democracy. Meanwhile, Vice President Kamala Harris, assigned to curb immigration from Central America, faces a crisis of corruption in El Salvador after a judicial coup by its president. These events illustrate how much the U.S. leads the world in battling corruption and encouraging people in other nations to demand equality before the law and an end to impunity. For decades, its most effective tool has been the 1977 Foreign Corrupt Practices Act. The U.S. share of global anti-corruption enforcement actions is now 66%. The long arm of U.S. law, along with pressure on countries to reform, touches a universal desire for honesty. Steadily, the U.S. can set a new world norm. That's a wrap for the news. You can find the full-length versions of these stories in today's issue or at csmonitor.com/daily. Thank you for joining us today. Please come back tomorrow when we look at how the pandemic has affected universities' efforts to bring in students of all backgrounds and what universities are doing to push forward. Today's Christian Science Spiritual Perspective contributor shares how a spiritual understanding of what we are can help us overcome conflict or division. You can find the column in today's issue or at csmonitor.com/daily. We want to give a quick thanks to our staff, including today's audio production team, Jeff Turton and Connie Foom.
This podcast is produced by the Christian Science Monitor. Copyright 2021.